Oh, Saul Goodman finally shows up, and we're going to talk about it next.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
And our full panel, guys, for you at home. Been wondering where everybody's been.
We're all here.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back. You are watching the after show for Better Call Saul. We're covering episode 6, Off Brand. I'm Rick Hong. You can find me on all social media at Rick Hong, and I'm joined by my full cast, starting with you, Mr. Steve Kaufman.
I'm Steve Kaufman. You can find me right here, right now. You can find me also on Twitter at Steve Kaufman. That's KAUFMANN.
And I'm back, guys. I'm Lucretia Lyon. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
Hey, AfterBuzzers, I'm Nate Miller. You can find me at Doglike Nate, and I'm also hosting the Silicon Valley After Show.
Oh, cool. Good for you, man. Yeah. That's great. Lucretia, you've been gone for a little bit, so I just wanted to see... I wanted to get some of your feedback on the last couple episodes. Or even just last episode, just a little bit.
Yeah, I really love the resolution of this last episode, because I was wondering how long we were going to drag out the case. And I like that, you know, it was pretty well as I predicted. Jimmy would, you know, be Jimmy and sort of outsmart Chuck, as he always has in his little Jimmy way. And, you know, I don't feel bad for Chuck one bit. I do wish we'd see a little bit more of Howard, and I wonder where he's going to go after this. But, yeah, that was my only question there. Yeah.
See, Steve brought up a good point last week where you said mid-season usually of a previous season would lead into – or, like, no, the finale of one season would lead into, like, the mid-season.
Yeah, that last week was kind of the bookending of everything, and then we wind up with the actual verdict that we was kind of foregone to us last week, where we're like, well, whatever. He broke his brother on the stand, and then we're like, oh wait, there's still.
Yeah, with all the buildup of that episode, like, that resolution felt so complete that we weren't even thinking about, like, okay, well, what is the actual verdict?
Because the best case scenario for them was always going to be like a 6 to 12 month suspension.
Probationary period, yeah.
So that they like fought really hard for it. And it was, yeah, we didn't get that till this week. But other than that, like, this was all a move forward. So it took technically 5 episodes to get past where we were at the end of last season.
Well, what's going to be interesting for me is to see when we get to the predictions is how you see how this one plans out for the next couple episodes. But, I mean, so speaking of, this is completely wrong from what I said earlier to you guys before we got on air, but let's talk about the verdict. You know, we see Kim, she's in court, and she's rattling off the saying, well, Jimmy is, he's been kind to the elderly, he has taken care of Chuck, he created a suit for Chuck, and the reason he acted the way that he did is because he felt betrayed, so he snapped, and he's sorry, and he also, it was like the destruction was, of property was, it wasn't premeditated. So it was like a passion crime.
Yeah.
So she's like, so you guys have to forgive that too, and then we see them celebrating. We see Jimmy and Kim celebrating, but yet we still look kind of on their side of it. We know that 12 months mean something, but they haven't like really been clear about what the 12 months is.
It sounds like it's a 12-month suspension.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, in that scene...
In that scene, they were celebrating because he didn't get completely disbarred. The question became, I guess you have to still be a lawyer to file someone's will?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was thinking. Like, there's a lot of stuff Jimmy would do that isn't going to court or necessarily being a lawyer. But apparently he went the other way. I was thinking he could be really shady and just do it all under Kim. And Kim would be the attorney of note of that whole firm for 12 months, and then Jimmy would just do all the work and she'd sign off on it.
But, I mean, as she said with Mesa Verde, she's too busy to take on that, and that's not really her field. And then you have the fact that, you know, Jimmy is really trying to stay under the radar, because if he's, you know, Chuck is looking for him to screw up, and everybody's looking for that. So, I mean, we all know he won't do that for long, but...
Right.
You know,
I think at some point that will happen, but I think for the time being, because of his concern with Kim, and then also the fact that, like, it's not like he can hide it from Kim. She knows that he's going to be looking for other sources of income. I think that's part of the reason why that discussion goes the way that it does, because she wants to make sure that she doesn't get roped into something that's going to, you know, screw her over again.
Okay. I mean, so let's skip to the flip side of it. The flip side is where they let us actually know that Howard and Chuck also feel like it's a victory, or at least Howard feels like it's a victory, and maybe also just feeling relieved to say, finally, Chuck, it's like you took the biggest dump of your life and you just let this thing go and let's move on.
I don't think Howard really sees it so much as a victory as just an opportunity to, like, get Chuck to just, like, leave it alone. I think he certainly knows that the goal was to, like, disbarment, definitely more than a 12-month suspension. So I think that's, especially with him bringing, you know, that incredibly expensive bottle.
Yeah, it was a Macallan 1965.
He's actually really trying to, like, work him over and, like, make him feel okay with this being a fine resolution, when in reality it's not at all for Chuck.
Well, but Chuck had an unrealistic... Chuck's expectations were all over the place.
Yeah.
He wanted his brother disbarred because he had deep-seated feelings about his brother, and that's just not a legal outcome. And Howard placated him all the way up to this, that I think Howard probably resents right now, that his job is to convince Chuck that this was a victory.
Yeah, to have to console him, to have to, like, try to bring him back around to the productive side, as opposed to just causing problem after problem after problem.
Yeah, and Jay Becker brings up a good point. Howard is Chuck's only friend. I mean, Chuck only opened the door for him, not even his ex-wife, who clearly still had feelings for and stuff like that. You know, so Howard's doing what a best friend does, is trying to cheer him up and see the bright side. This is a victory. You know he'll screw up again, you know. And I just love Patrick Fabian. So,
the actor that plays Howard.
Awesome. Yeah.
Okay. I love the way he talks.
Yeah. I mean, and he's just like that in an interview.
See, I wasn't sure what Howard was going to do, because I felt he was just getting to the point of where he was just getting annoyed and just wanted the thing to be over with. And I literally thought maybe by him showing up to that house was him finally saying, okay, man, let's figure out how to cut ties, because I'm sick of you, I'm sick of this. But it went a completely opposite direction that I thought it went.
I thought that might happen too.
But the end of that scene, none of these things in film, but especially on Breaking Bad style film, nothing happens by accident. The "you okay to drive"... Did anyone else read too much into that like me?
Jonathan Ma in the chat said, did anyone else think Howard was going to crash in a DUI? So he obviously thought
at
that.
At least one other person.
Oh, yeah.
At least one other person overthought it like that.
That's really cool.
You're right. There are not all... There's nothing wasted in the show. Everything, like, means something. So
He's either going to get a DUI or he's going to just straight up... Like, that would be a really weird way to kill Howard off screen, but or he would get into an accident. Mm. They also, like, it seemed to be one drink, so it would be whatever.
Yeah. But we don't know how much he actually drank and what his tolerance is.
That's true.
I mean, it was a 35-year-old scotch. I mean, you can't just drink one.
Right.
And so, did we see him leaving with it?
He put it on the counter. But it was a matter of, are you okay to drive? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm totally fine.
Yeah, even if he's asking, it raises a caution.
He can have a DUI and he might need Chuck to defend him in court. For DUI,
and that's problematic too. A friend of mine in the system, I think, got pulled over, and he said he was like, "Dude, I was lucky to have gotten to go home." Granted, he wasn't wasted, but I think that's very, that's like disbarment, like DUI, DWI. I don't even know how they, because they're attorneys.
Is that a felony in New Mexico?
Not necessarily. It can be, depending on the level. DUI is a really interesting thing, because it can be a misdemeanor as well as a felony, depending on how many you've had, things like that. So,
Well, vehicular homicide is above a felony.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
We'll, if we'll you want to get crazy. Yeah.
We'll see if it if that line ends up being something or if it's just a red herring to make us think about DUI.
Interesting.
Law.
I didn't catch it. Now I've got to go back and rewatch that.
But a vehicular homicide would solve the whole thing we're talking about. It's just like, nope, now that burns the whole farm to the ground.
No, since you brought up that little nugget, then we see Chuck holding the battery. And I don't know if he's holding it like it's kryptonite.
He's training himself.
He's trying to see if he can go outside. I that's how I took that.
I think he's like, I think he's decided either that he can overcome it mentally or that he's ready to like try to take steps to actually do something different. But I think that's how I saw it as like a, especially once it rolled away and he like gripped it and the way he felt it. And then later you see him obviously walking and he calls some doctor. So I'm guessing that he's going in that direction of trying to, you know, having been proven in court that he had the battery and when he didn't know about it, he was fine. So he is still a smart guy. And especially when you're trying to accomplish something, you want to get every advantage you can.
And Chuck is the kind of person that once he realized that Jimmy had had him, the battery was there, and that that didn't work, that he's now thinking that maybe this is sort of, you know, not necessarily what he thought it was, being allergic to electricity and all this. So he's testing it out to see if, you know, he still feels it.
And that he's seeking a doctor again, because it looks like he went to a doctor, and for whatever reason, and he seems bullheaded enough that it could have been the doctor keeps trying to explain to him, like, no, it's psychological. You need to deal psychologically. Like, you can't deal with a neurologist. Yeah, you can't deal with an oncologist. I'm just going to make up ologists. But, like...
but the like study you, of. The you, study of.
You can't deal with... You can't deal with physical doctors when it's a mental problem. And I think Jimmy may have proved it to him in court with that battery that it is a mental problem.
Right.
On the same scale of delusions.
Mm-hmm. Right, and Chuck's pride just wouldn't let him even get anywhere near a productive solution.
Yeah.
Situation like that.
Or a solution outside his mind tree.
Right.
Where it's like, no.
It doesn't fit his narrative.
Yeah, my narrative is that I have an allergy to electricity, therefore there's nothing we can do other than keep me away from electricity. Whereas the science isn't entirely behind his narrative.
Or maybe it's that thing where he sees his ex and she sees him so vulnerable. So now he can sit there and say, like, look what I've overcome. Can I win you back? Or just that she's seen him, like, so low. Like, he completely lost it. So there's, like, I think maybe, like, internal redemption for himself.
I could see that, but I honestly feel like Chuck's such a, like, single-minded, you know, pick a goal and stick to it, that I think he's not even thinking about her, and all he's thinking about is either, you know, figuring out some way to get back at Jimmy or like this new resolution of like bettering himself and fixing, you know, what he's been dealing with. I don't know. I mean, it definitely could be the motivation, but I'm much more inclined to think that he's motivated by revenge.
Yeah, sadly, I agree with you that Chuck is very single-minded. I mean, that's been his problem from day one, is he's been trying to get Jimmy out of the law, no matter what. And even though he loves his ex-wife and things like that, he's not even factoring her in at this point. Yeah.
Steve?
Yes.
Okay. good. Well, I mean, so we do see Rebecca. She does show up and she kind of does interrupt the whole Kim and Jimmy celebration and calls him out and is like, help your brother.
I don't think we've seen the last of her, for sure. I do think she will have some more involvement in whatever Chuck's going
through. Well, it's one thing if you leave your husband because he's an a-hole. It's another thing that you leave your husband because he has a mental problem. And she loves him still, so she's not giving up on him at all. So we're gonna see a lot of her. Like, but I'm shocked she didn't try to break a door down or something, like, to get to him.
Yeah, because she did go to Jimmy, you know, trying to get him to do that. So yeah, I'm surprised she hasn't even done, you know. But she may be trying to get the steps of like getting a welfare check or something.
Welfare check, I love that. But finally, we see Jimmy say, no, I've had enough of Chuck. He says, you know, not anymore, he's not my brother, and, you know, and that's, you know, and he's just like, I don't know Chuck squat.
I feel like Jimmy wasn't genuine when he was saying that. I feel like he was saying that to get her out, and because, you know, I know Kim brought this up, and Jimmy felt really bad about bringing Rebecca into this. Jimmy still has a heart, and he does love Chuck. I do think that Chuck loves Jimmy, but not in the same way, because they don't seem to have the same sort of human emotions. But yeah, with Jimmy in that situation, I feel that he was pushing Rebecca away to kind of protect her from, you know, his Jimmyisms.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
I also agree with you. Very
well said.
Okay, so the aftermath for Jimmy is, so now we've covered the verdict. We covered the verdict. That's a 12-month. So now we see this whole Jerry Maguire scene where he's going to call all his clients and go through and give them a spiel.
You can't get better montages nowadays than, you know, this show, and, you know, obviously Breaking Bad, which came before it. But man, the editing and the music, and the way they layer the dialogue, it's just, if it all fits together so well. I loved it.
It sucks he didn't know like a law student who like just passed the bar that he can pat, like, it sucks he had no kind of apprentice that could, I'm still thinking of ways he could have kept his practice. That he had an actual lawyer he could hire. The lawyer could do all the things that a lawyer is required to do, but his name's still on the door. But he didn't have that.
I feel like that would just be too close to walking the line of, you know, someone finding out that you are involved in legal things that are happening. I think that would just put him in jeopardy.
Also, we never saw the sentencing. I'm sure the sentencing was very clear, too, of what he could and couldn't do.
Yeah, and that was the thing, is he couldn't even make commercials, so I'm thinking that that may have been their way of, you know, he couldn't even pass his cases. He had to just, you know, to somebody he knew. It had to be, like, a clean break. And Jay Becker brings up a point that I thought of, Ernie. Like, that would have been great if Ernie could have taken it over,
Oh, yeah, is it the last of, oh, gosh, that's right. Man, they keep popping in.
I don't think Ernie's a lawyer, but I...
Yeah, was he not? Yeah.
But
because I think he worked for the firm, but it was never said if he was a lawyer or
if he was a paralegal or if he was an executive assistant, mailroom guy,
or was he an associate, an actual lawyer?
Should have been the one assistant from Jimmy's old job that wanted his job. What was his name?
Oh yeah, that guy was cool.
But that guy would have started his own practice. Yeah. I think the easy way to do was to keep the call list and be really nice and send them a very official letter, and then in 12 months he can pick them all up as clients. This timeline seems accelerated enough that that's not what's going to happen.
Yeah, but it's cool. It's a cool sequence. And speaking of, is the director for this episode, from what I've read, and if I didn't see the credits correctly, but it's Keith Gordon, and he's the son in Back to School, and he's also in the movie Christine. He's the guy that actually obsesses over the car. I don't know if you've ever seen Christine.
I have. Yeah. I'm terrible with names. I'm really good with faces, but I'm terrible.
I'm just
with
trying
names.
To picture the guy. Yeah. That's him.
I will look it up.
No, but that leads us into the whole where he's doing it, and then he realizes through Francesca, or no, through his Mr. Yalowitz or whoever he was talking to, that crap, I do have those earrings left, and he's running to say, "Oh, wait a minute," and we find out that. There's 9 earrings left, and it's $4,000 that he can't resell.
That sounds like a Jimmy problem. Do we think this was his plan the whole time, or do we think this he just knows he can move forward and find opportunity?
I think this just happened. I think I don't think he's even worried about a plan. I think he knows that. He's just the kind of guy that can capitalize on any opportunity and take the, you know, make the best of it. And so I think he knows that. I think that's why he's so confident, and, you know, and that's why we've seen the things that we've seen.
He's a fast thinker from anything. He's a very, very, very quick thinker. Think back to Breaking Bad right before, spoiler guys, but right before, you know, Jesse and Walter may be going to kill him. He's really quick about, and that was the whole reference to Kim, give me a dollar and I become your attorney.
Well, also in that scene, he quickly heard a cough that was clearly cancer, which we now know is because he he did elderly law for years.
Mr. Mayhew, yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, LaCrease, you were going to say something.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, and that's what makes Jimmy so good at what he does and why Chuck hates him, is because no matter what Chuck could ever do with the law, Jimmy was always going to best him because Jimmy was just that kind of thinker. And I think that's what Kim likes in Jimmy, because she was really impressed that he, like, thought of that on what to do, and he's like, well, I couldn't do this, but I can do that, and then, you know, this gives me some way to make money and this and that, and she's like, I love the look on her face, just impressed that he came up with that quickly.
The part of his quick-wittedness is his ability to be resourceful with everything that's around him, and in within that is a lot of, like, optimism, and that any situation he sees, he's not like, all right, we can't do this, we have to stop. He's like, okay, well, the game has changed, how can we play now? What do we do to win? And he'll use anything and everything around him, people, to get what he needs to get done. And that's why he's such a great lawyer.
So then there's the discussion, and maybe if you guys want me to save it for predictions, I can do that, but they discuss Francesca. And what are they going to do with her for the time being? We know from Breaking Bad how she's still in Jimmy's or Saul's life at that point. But if you guys want to save it for predictions, we can do that.
No, I think it's pretty simple. Jimmy finds something for her to do. Because Jimmy, whatever Jimmy's up to, she's along for the ride. It sounds like he's selling airtime.
He's now, you know, owning a production office. Yeah.
Yeah, like a very low-level regional advertising agency is what he's doing on the sly
until the time slots run out.
Yeah, so
but then he could buy more.
Yeah, if it's working out.
So that's my question, is when you guys were watching the scene where he's talking to the carpet couple, did you understand did you understand what he was doing at that point, or did it not click until later? For me, it clicked in a little bit later, other than it made me laugh when he said, I'll charge you $4,900, as opposed to the $4,000. I was like, hey, that's smart.
Yeah.
No, it didn't click with me till he told Kim specifically that, like, I'm giving them the airtime. I can give them airtime. I just can't sell them airtime.
Yeah, I figured it out while he was talking to them. I was like, oh, yeah, he had all these commercial slots, and, you know, he's having to get around this because he can't practice law and thus can't show these commercials. So it was really interesting to see that wasn't what he came up with, because it was brilliant.
Well, he also can't sell the time slots, too.
Exactly.
And that's why I was confused, because he kept throwing out numbers, saying, well, it's $849 this and $4,900 that, and we'll do this, but I'll give this to you for free. He was going so fast. I was like, what? What's going on here, huh?
He makes a great salesman. Yeah. He definitely, you know, knows his way around words. His reaction, though, when, like, I think he felt very confident in his pitch, and they were like, all right, well, we'll think about it. He's like, great. A week? I was thinking, like, 320 today.
The next 15 minutes.
good salesman can pull off a hard pitch like that, a hard sell like that. I was never a good salesperson.
Oh, man.
Like, in my best sales days, I was best because I didn't care. That I would call and be like, hey, this is the offer. And there'd be dead air because I wouldn't try to upsell. I wouldn't try to pit. I'd be like, yeah, this is the benefits of the thing. These are the offers. I would not be offended if you don't take it. That's the most successful for me in sales.
Sales is brutal, man.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know if he's... I don't know how long the commercial business is going to last, but obviously we have the name Saul Goodman now, and he's you know, using it, it's out there. I think he's going to go the route of being Saul Goodman as whatever opportunity comes up, you know, especially with him looking as ambiguous as he did in the commercial, obviously intentionally. You know, that could take him who knows where. I'm sure it's going to be something that will end up tying into maybe what's going on with Gus and Hector. I think maybe that may come into play.
Why did none of us call the phone number on the ad?
Oh, yeah.
We should... Next week, we will call the phone number on the ad live.
And give you the results.
Live here.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
We'll do that live.
Watch it be some person be like, quit calling me!
Got him, see?
I did love that we got the return of the film students, and then he's like, just Karloff it.
Like, well, it's like funny because he's
like his cinema love.
He's auditioning each one. You say it first. You go. Like, no,
I feel like
you go.
I feel like the kid with the boom would have had a better second read.
Oh yeah.
Like, I don't think he really knew the copy. Right. I don't think he was
paying attention.
Yeah, like, I literally don't think he was paying attention and just tried to like wing it instead of like, hey, I really don't know the copy. Can you give me another chance? Like, I think he'd have been a good pitchman.
Well, hence it reads like that's why it's the title is like off-brand, because it's like, yeah, you guys are like so off-brand. Right. And,
yeah.
But nobody in their right mind thought that this is how Saul Goodman shows up. That name.
No.
As a Alan Smithy, as they call in the film world, if you want to take your name off and throw something else in as Alan Smithy, that's how Saul Goodman shows up, as not any version of an attorney or anything we've ever discussed.
Yeah, that was the thing, is for that to be the reveal of how he came up with that and why, you're like, that's interesting, because none of us were expecting it. Yeah.
I was expecting to hear the name and that it was going to come quickly after, you know, the full getting the verdict that he won't be able to do law, but I definitely was not seeing it as something to do with him shooting commercials.
Yeah.
I'm seeing if I can find that phone number.
Oh, right, no. what does the chat say? Anybody in the chat
Becker
say something?
Jay Becker in the chat says call now. And so. I was about to reply, like, give us the phone number. And I was like, that's a mistake. Don't do that. Let's find the phone number here.
Mm. Oh, wow. Okay. Hey, we're going to see something cool.
Well, not right. I don't have the phone number. We can keep talking.
You know, I just heard tick, 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 tick. So I thought you were really trying to dial something there. Yeah, I didn't expect... I would love, I mean, I'm going to tap into, like, after we get off this show, talk to some of the other guys that have covered this in the past to say, hey, what were your thoughts about him being a film guy or movie producer, or to become Saul Goodman and had nothing to do with the law or him being any version of a criminal or on some end. Mm-hmm. Anything dirty.
No. Mm? Yeah, it was very clean.
Yeah. It was a nice reveal, especially for what was, in my opinion, a bit of a lull in the season pacing after the previous episodes we've had. It was a nice little cherry on top at the end.
I mean, is that good? Because when did he showed up in which season in Breaking Bad, Steve? Do you know?
Two.
Season two?
Yes.
So we've had almost six seasons before we finally get the real origin of where Saul Goodman is born, right? Season 2, season 3, 4, 5, and then jump to seasons 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Six-ish seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you look at it that way, it makes sense.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying where he was physically born, and I'm like, we learned that pretty early. Like, no, who Saul Goodman?
I think he was born in New Mexico, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's still a lot more, though, to because how does he get to the point of where, you know, obviously the 12 months expires in 12 months, but... obviously we see him later practicing law, but under the name Saul Goodman.
Not yeah, and we'll definitely write
so
later.
So there's got to be more coming. Even though we've got the Saul Goodman name, we still probably have a long way to go.
And Tim Reno, 72 in the chat, brings up Saul Goodman was mentioned in the alley scene in season 1 of Breaking Bad.
Right, that's where it comes from. Yeah. I thought we knew that.
Okay.
I think with the watch gag with his friend.
Yeah.
Are they robbing people?
Someone posted the phone number on Reddit, but I just got there and someone took it down. But I think it's the same 505 number. I'll get to the bottom of this before we're done here. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk to Saul Goodman tonight.
Was there a number on the
There's a 505 number on, like, most of the ads. It's a matter of if they've changed it at all.
Was there a number on the Gimme Jimmy ad? It's probably the same.
Yeah, Marvelous24OZ says 505-842-5662 is the number.
How we feeling? Do we want to do it?
Hey, man. Hey, this is the now. Let's break it right now.
That's
and see
the
what
worst
happens.
That could happen.
Yeah. Someone hangs up on us.
All right.
Read it, what was that number again? Hold up.
Oh,
I'm doing this.
Our guy's doing it for us.
It's in the chat.
Oh, that doesn't help.
Sorry.
Good question.
I'm pulling up Skype right now. We're gonna call it.
Awesome. We're doing it.
Boop, boop, beep, boop, boop. That's my beep, Skype beep. Impression.
That was a very good.
No, it's really good.
Yeah.
Are you secretly the guy who made those noises?
No, I wish I was. Yeah. So. That'd be a nice check.
I know it's not 1-800-909-9900.
Yeah, that's where I used to work.
That's the WCW.
Oh, I know that.
All right, guys, we're doing this. Hold on.
What was it?
Okay, it is 505-842-5662. Oh, wait, and we have an updated number, too.
Let's see what...
If this doesn't work.
Let's see what this... Because there's probably a list of these numbers.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
All
right,
all
here.
All busy.
There's Everybody's probably trying to dial it.
Well, there's another number they gave us. So let's try this new one, because John Nauer in the chat says this one's working. So we've got a 505-503-4455.
Watch it be his number. Hey, guys, am I on? Is that me?
That'd be pretty funny.
That's good. That's a good idea.
I was like, you know, that's pretty clever.
Now we don't know.
503-4455?
Yes.
But I have a good pitch for our commercial already.
Yeah.
Hello, hola, yate. You called Saul. You reached the Saul Goodman and Associates. Your one-stop shop for all things law. If they've accused you of breaking bad, better call Saul. If you're currently under arrest or in custody, follow my three patented rules. One, keep your mouth shut. Two, keep your mouth shut. Three, don't make eye contact with anyone in a holding cell, unless you're looking to make a love connection. Visit my website for more free advice. BetterCallSaul.com. The solution to your problems is just minutes away. Your call is important to us. Please continue to hold. Drug felonies, press 1. DUI, press 2. Slip and fall on government property, press 3. Illegal animal smuggling, press 4. Unreasonably hot fast food beverage accident, press 5. Wayfair 515 victims, press 6. To continue this message
two?
In Tagalog,
we
press star.
We're gonna press
you gotta press star to continue the message in Tagalog.
Your call is important to us. Please continue to hold.
I don't think it does.
Oh, do we just sit on hold?
What, the cops won't let you hold anymore? You're running out of quarters? Look, if you're going to break bad, you got to be prepared. For more free legal advice, head to my website, BetterCallSaul.com.
That was pretty awesome.
That was eventful.
That was great.
Thank you, Chad.
No, Steve, that's a great idea on your part.
Yeah.
And a Dizzy Lads in the chat says, I saw a sign out front of Raby's, the carpet store, for a one-hour massage for $40. I wonder if it's legit. You know, in Hollywood, you can get one for about that. And I think they have a special...
I think that's going to be our new thing next week. Yeah. Next week, I'm going to have to hit pause and write down a bunch of phone numbers.
Yeah.
Let's go find... let's go watch the original Ghostbusters and call that and see what happens.
Yeah.
No. It's definitely going to be some random guy. Or they've probably disconnected
it. It's just Bill Murray, and he's like, why are you calling the store?
Okay, so to take this in a little bit of different direction, let's go with some other characters. And, you know, in the beginning of the episode, we see Hector Salamanca with Nacho.
Mm-hmm.
And Nacho is doing his collections while Hector's, like, in the background just kind of watching him. And as you and I discussed the whole counting the money, putting in a roll, throwing in a bag. And when you see Domino, or I think I've been read online, Crazy Eight walks in, he's all nervous.
Mm-hmm.
You're already feeling nervous for him. But it didn't go quite the way that I thought it was going to go with Nacho. Like, Nacho forgave him. But then Hector was, that's it? And then Nacho goes after him, brings him back in, and just starts beating the crap out of him in the back room.
Yeah, because Nacho, much like, you know, say Jimmy and Mike, is not really this bad guy. Like, you know, he's got a heart. He doesn't want to beat up this guy, even though he's got some problems with him. But, you know, Hector just laying down the law. Like, you going to let him treat you like that? No.
I don't know if I can agree with Nacho being a bad guy. Not a bad guy, but he's definitely not. He's definitely on the softer side.
Yeah, he's on the softer side.
But I think he has the potential, give it a few more years, you know, especially with Hector.
Although I feel like he'd be better suited to work with somebody like Gus.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So working under Hector, I think he's kind of lashing out, and I think there's also the fact that Hector clearly values Tuco more than him. Where it's like Tuco's that kind of old school, mobster, if you will, that old school cartel guy that Taco just doesn't see it that way.
Tuco is his son, or like his nephew.
His nephew. Yeah. Tuco's his nephew.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of what it is too, is like this is my little nephew. Probably especially because he grew up to be like the perfect little gangster nephew.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of, like, especially with how he reacted, like flipping, he was very like emotional, and you know, we've seen him get like crazy before, but usually he just, you know, gets a crazy look in his eyes and says some shit. But to like physically lash out, and then with Nacho's reaction, this is not like the first time this has happened.
Yeah, like Hector is really sensitive when it comes to Tuco. I mean, he obviously cares about him in a way, you know, as a, you know, his little heir to this gangster throne.
Mm. Just what'd you guys think of the pill? The pill being dropped on the ground, like later on when Nacho comes back and has a conversation with...
bordering on predictions, but I think he's gonna poison them.
Yeah, that's what someone in the chat had said earlier. I was trying to see who it was.
I think he's gonna poison Hector, and we've all assumed that Gus put Hector in a wheelchair, but we don't actually know.
Okay, yeah. So then we'll pivot from predictions, and let's talk about the dismantling of the Los Pollos Hermanos, where they put the drugs. Mm. How'd you guys like that scene?
It was great. It reminded me of...
I love montages, you know me.
Also, the facility they were in reminded me of the Walter White facility. And then we get a later scene where it's like, oh, they're actually buying the Walter White facility right now.
And then who shows up? Lydia Rodarte Quayle. Yeah.
I know. I was just like, holy crap, that's Lydia. That was a shocker, you know, to bring up. Because we already got Gus this season. I was not expecting to see any more cameos.
I actually brought that up last week, and I was saying to these guys, now I'm going to ask you this question. Mm. Yeah, we've seen Gus, which has been awesome to see Gus. Mm. And then we saw Huel.
Yeah.
And now we've seen Lydia. Is it too many cameos of old characters in just one season, even though we don't know how they're going to be utilized yet? Like, I've read about Huel, and I've read with the actress that plays Lydia to say, like, hey, this is how I got the call, this is how I came on the show. And granted, I'm sure they're also gagged not be able to say if there are going to be more episodes for them this season, but I don't know if you think it's too many characters, or you're like, no, it's been okay.
I think it's been okay, because Gus is the big get, I mean, in reality. And the thing is he's still being used a little bit sparingly. I mean, because this is sort of, you know, the Jimmy becoming Saul show, and, like, you know, Mike. And it's been done well without seeming too gimmicky. Because, yeah, it's like Lydia's in one scene. I mean, you know, it's not a big deal. But, yeah, I was just not expecting to see her so quickly.
Yeah, I think appearances are fine. Yeah. Like, to be very honest, if it made sense within the show, like, hypothetically, if Jimmy were somehow walking through a high school, it would make sense to me, like, oh, maybe he sees Walt for, like, a second. But it has to make sense within the context of the show. Seeing Lydia makes sense. Seeing Huel made sense. Seeing Gus definitely makes sense. And it has yet to be gimmicky.
I agree. It doesn't feel forced, which is what my big concern was when it came out that there was going to be a lot more cameos this season. But yeah, it feels natural, and the one thing I'm excited for is just to see, because it looks like we're going to see, like, how Gus puts together what eventually becomes, like, his empire.
Yeah, we see that little kind of direction of where Hector is talking to Nacho and being like, hey, wait, what'd your dad do? You know, and he's like, dude, my dad is an innocent guy. Leave him alone. Leave him out of this. Which could be the thing that leads to
him poisoning him, possibly.
Which, I mean, I think we could, I mean, I almost think that we're, unless you guys want to talk about the Nacho's day job being a upholsterer.
Yeah,
that's what that's why I say I've never seen Nacho be like an evil gangster like a lot of our other, you know, Nacho is similar, you know, kind of like a young Gus, where there's still this likable part about Gus. I mean, you saw how he was with his employees. He was like, yes, you know, this is terrible if you need any counseling. And Nacho has that side as well, where this is just sort of his life and how it's gone, but he's still, you know, his dad's son, you know, and wanting to protect his father and this, you know, his legitimate business and things like that. And that's, I love learning that about Nacho. It gives him a new layer.
I also, the scene where he was actually upholstering, that, like, subtle smile on his face while he was actually just working reminded me of that Jesse scene from the finale where he was working on
wood. About the box.
Yeah. And, like, he literally found happiness in just regular work. And then he cut himself, and I'm like, oh, well, he's just into hurting himself and kind of not in a great place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you were going to say he's a cutter.
Yeah. It happens.
Take your poison.
I mean, Nate...
It seems like he's just being pushed to his his limits. I think he's been building up this resentment for a long time, and maybe just because of the things that are going on with Gus, and now him bringing his dad into it, that he's just kind of reaching a point of where he either realizes that he doesn't need to just take it anymore, or he just doesn't care what the repercussions are. But it should be interesting. I like Nacho's character a lot. I do. I think he's a bad guy still. You know, in the same way that, just like how you said Gus is likable, I think Gus is very likable too.
Yeah.
Gus is a cold, you know, MF.
Yeah. I think Gus is a bad guy too, but I at least respect that he's a bad guy who only deals with other bad guys.
Well, they're different in that. Obviously they run their organizations differently. Gus is of the old school. You know, you respect me of the things that I have done before, and, like, I don't need to show you every time. Mm. Whereas Hector and Nacho are in that environment of ultra violence is just the way that the cartel has done things in the past for a long time, and that's just, it's almost expected. And that's why I think Hector says what he says to him, like, who works for who, you know? And I think, I don't know if that was so much him telling Nacho, you know, that he works for you, or as much as if he was telling Nacho, you work for me. And that's not how we do things.
Mm. I think it was a little bit of both.
Right.
Yeah.
And are we missing anything key between, obviously it's some sort of weird power play, but saying the 5 kilos or bricks as opposed to getting 6, I don't know if that meant anything to you guys. I haven't figured that part of it out yet, other than just kind of...
It was just his way of seeing how far they could go with Gus. It, you know...
Just right. Another rib at him. Yeah. Just another...
Like he likes to do.
Well, and because they deal so differently. Whereas if Hector were dealing with somebody like Hector, he would either do that because he knew that person wouldn't back down, or he would never do that because he knew that person would shoot the whole place up on principle. He's dealing with Gus, who doesn't deal that way, and he knows we can steal a 6th brick every time. And it's the idea of push and pull. Like, let's push and see exactly where we can go with Gus, because Gus is not of the streets. Gus is not an alpha of this situation.
Well, he's that guy that's gonna let you, you know, screw him over and he's gonna give you just enough rope to hang yourself. And Hector just doesn't respect that kind of mentality because he doesn't see things that far ahead. He only sees the immediate, what's right in front of him. So he that definitely gives an advantage to Gus, but yeah, that's why they don't respect him, because they're not able to see the potential.
Also, correct me if I'm wrong, but those bricks were all heroin, because meth is in the glass form.
Yeah, it's not looked meth. Like it was heroin or cocaine, heroin or possibly. Coke or
something. So it looks like no one's in the meth business yet.
Right.
That they're all dealing in heroin right now, which is why Gus is looking at other ventures to get into the meth business.
Yeah, because, you know, heroin gets them hooked, but kills them quick. You know, meth, they got a longer lifespan, I think, you know?
I thought it was coke. Yeah. That's usually what I just go to.
Yeah.
Isn't coke white? I don't know.
White bricks.
Yeah.
I just say it's...
These are browner bricks that look like that. My understanding of drugs are specifically how they're shown to me on television.
Well, I mean, remember that they're covered in orange sand, too.
Yeah.
So it's not gonna,
it might be coke.
It's not going to be...
Yeah.
Isn't heroin... I don't know. I feel like it was heroin. Let me know.
Yeah. Hey, at least we know what it is when it's blue, right?
Yeah.
It's Walter shit.
Or just any type of glass, like...
Any kind of glass, you know.
I learned a lot about drugs from Breaking Bad. Yeah.
All right.
Like, you want to learn about drugs? They call methina in the gay community. It's fun. You know? Fun facts. I've got the drug facts. You know?
All right, let's do your predictions. Where are my Roswell lights? There we go.
Yeah.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Nate, I'll let you go first.
Oh,
if you want to. Don't feel on the spot.
I feel on the spot, Rick. I'm not going
to
lie to you.
All right, what do you guys jump in?
I think we're going to see Gale this season. Or, yeah.
Yeah, that's what
I think
I'm
that's
thinking.
Easy. I think Gus is going to build the facility and then put him in place to make the meth.
Real, it's so Gale,
and,
really?
And so much so that Gus is probably going to get out of the heroin business and start cooking meth. And it's going to be perceived by Hector as a victory of like, "Oh, we overcame Gus," when really it was like, "No, Gus does heroin and he's the only heroin and he's the best heroin." Mhm.
That's a great one. I have nothing negative to say about bringing in Gale.
And two, that's something that Gus would do, because Gus is a very big picture thinker and sees things ahead. And if he's like, you know what, Hector can have heroin or coke or whatever it was, but I'm going to get some new stuff. You know?
Yeah, that's the smart business decision, especially from a guy that doesn't want to go to war, just, you know, for some territory, to just move laterally and make your own, you know, footprint and make your own profit. And that's just going to make him look even better with, you know, in terms of the cartel. You know, he's bringing in a whole new revenue stream and he doesn't have to worry about getting it over the border because they're making it right there. But I think you're on to something, because Gus is definitely, he wouldn't be scouting the building. He wouldn't have Lydia there already if they weren't already, like, you know, everything's ready to go. We're just checking off the checklist.
Yeah, that he's got all the things he needs. I also think, by the end of this season, which we only have four more weeks,
yep.
I also think that Taco will put Hector in the wheelchair.
Mm. You mean Nacho?
Or sorry, Nacho.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's okay.
I think Hector will wind up in the wheelchair not by Gus's hand by the end of this season.
Yeah, I was going to say that kind of goes into my prediction. Yeah. I mean, which kind of makes it does seem obvious with the pill, and you see him looking at it, him trying to strong arm getting his father. Because I know if someone tried to get my father into some sort of corrupt business, I would do anything to like not let that happen. But definitely not what I think most of us have always thought, that it would be Gus doing something to Hector instead.
And two, it makes more sense now, you know, looking at that moment and thinking, because Gus still wanted revenge. If he'd put Hector into this helpless state, he might not have been as, you know, revenge hungry with the Salamancas in Breaking Bad. This, you know, kind of comes around. Yeah,
maybe that's why he feels like he has to get his revenge, because he was robbed of it.
Yeah, he's like, oh.
And it makes sense too, him being in the chair and the paralyzed thing, that it would come from some type of overdose or some poisoning something like that, as opposed to something more physical.
I also think the Nacho Tuco partnership on the Salamanca front, because Hector can't speak, would be better for Gus, because they wouldn't go after Gus anymore, or at least not as much. Like, not as bad as Hector. Like, Hector won't be satisfied unless Gus is actually wiped off the market. Even if he gets a small victory from dealing heroin, but then he realizes there's meth, he's going to try to come after the meth empire. But that doesn't happen because Hector's not speaking. He's in a wheelchair. So,
okay, should we get anybody good in the chat that has like a good prediction?
Let's see. And Jonathan Moss says Nacho might even work with Gus to poison Hector. Because that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
I think that might happen. Mm. All right, here's my prediction. We're going to see a lot of Mike. We're going to get like at least a whole Mike episode.
Yes.
Because two episodes now. I miss me some Mike.
Yeah, we only had like that brief snippet tonight.
Well, he's going to do some stuff.
I think Mike's going to get involved with the Hector-Gus stuff.
But the question is, from which angle?
From Gus.
I hope so, yeah.
Because Gus said maybe you should work for me, and he was like, depends on the job. He doesn't want to be Gus's grunt. He's not adverse to like doing a particular job for Gus.
Yeah, he doesn't have an issue with Gus like he does with Hector, because much like, you know, Mike, Gus is very a big picture guy, doesn't want to, you know, make a big mess.
I just remember we didn't talk about the meeting.
The very brief meeting.
Yeah. So he was in this episode.
Yeah, briefly. Right. That's why I kind that. Of. No, it's, I didn't forget, but just more.
I forgot.
Yeah, just the, more like the group. I don't know if it was group therapy or if it was church, but.
So that's kind of. That has to mean something, though, too.
Yeah, no, that absolutely.
because I feel like I don't think that he's gonna be it, that Gus is just gonna call him up being like, all right, hey, I want to work, I want to do something. I think it's gonna be some type of situation that forces them to work together. Mm. So I think there's something that is like hard to predict that is gonna come out
Hector's,
of nowhere.
Hector's doing something that could affect that church.
Yeah, possibly.
And that Mike comes to Gus and is like, I just need your help to make something right.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is Mike, you know, will do anything to protect his daughter-in-law and his granddaughter, so if anything's happening at that church, he would want to come in. Because this is why I've always loved the character of Mike, is because he has, like, he does care about these people. I mean, that's what eventually does him in, is, you know, too. He's just a practical guy, and that's what he does now. And it's just a matter of he would go to these lengths to protect them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Steve, where can everybody find you?
Here and now. Also on Twitter, I'm at Steve Kaufman. That's KAUFMANN. I do a lot of stuff here at AfterBuzz TV. I tweet about it regularly, including this Sunday. I will be covering both WWE Backlash and The Leftovers. It's going to be a weird night.
And I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one. And I will be on the Flash After Show tomorrow. We'll be having a good old tally time there.
Again, guys, this is Nate Miller. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at DogLikeNate. And next Sunday, I will be hosting the Silicon Valley After Show, so you can see me there.
Cool, guys, and I'm Rick Hong. You can find me on all social media at Rick Hong. And if you like Master of None, which just dropped last Friday, I'll be covering that on Wednesday, same time, 11 p.m., so stay up late. Thanks for watching.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Better call you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.